What's my name?
Jessica.
What's my name?
Jessica.
What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Journey, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, and teaching journey. And today, we got another podcast episode, another solo one. Don't worry, the ones with other people are going to be coming back. I'm actually in the process of recording them and recording some. Right now, it is just me. I'm doing some solo ones. And I'm thinking, moving on, we're going to have kind of two different formats, where you're going to get me in giving solo information, especially when I come to things like this, these conferences, and then also the ones where I'm bringing people on. Before we get started with this impactful conversation that's going to help so many people out there, whether you're neurotypical or you have neurodivergent or you have neurotypical children or neurodivergent children, this episode will really help you. And I haven't done enough episodes for my neurodivergent population, so this is one that I'm really excited to do, and I'm going to do another one tomorrow as well. Before we get into all of that, though, I want to tell you about the thing that I'm offering that I really do think is the best service that I have offered, to be quite honest, because you get kind of everything. Right? You get the classes with me where I break down everything, and honestly, I said they're going to be an hour. Be real with you, the classes are about an hour and a half to 2 hours because we really get into it and people ask questions, right? And what I love is that we've already started to kind of create a culture where people aren't afraid to share and ask questions and share the successes and failures and the not there yets. And it's been really beautiful. It makes the sessions a little bit longer, but they make them more impactful. And people get to ask their own questions. You know, as I'm giving them information and giving them, you know, examples, they're like, well, what about my example? What about this specific situation? And I'm like, wow, I thank you for asking. That helps me dive even deeper into the nuance of what I was talking about. And, or helps me recognize I need to emphasize something a little bit more, that maybe we didn't quite get something that I thought I explained, but you didn't receive it, so I didn't explain it well enough, or I didn't explain it in a way that makes sense for you and your situation. So I absolutely love this. I love doing it. And I get to really connect with all the parents out there. This is for parents. This is not for teachers. A teacher could definitely take it and use all of the skills that they learn 100% and use it in the classroom. But all the examples and the focus is parenting examples and in situations that are that parents are in, not situations that teachers typically find themselves in. So really, really think about signing up for that. You go to www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz and you can sign up to the book club learning community to get access. But anyways, let's jump into this session right here. So this conference that I'm actually at right now, it is all about supporting children with disabilities. And we're talking about a range of disabilities, a range of differences, exceptionalities. We're talking about ADHD, ODD, autism, hearing loss, all types of disabilities. Now, this is something you've heard on the podcast before. Visual supports are super helpful. I'm actually going to go into deeper about that, though. There's a podcast that I did a while back with a couple of special ed contained classroom teachers, and it's called How to Get Kids to Listen Using Visuals. Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, the one you're listening to right now. But we're actually going to dive deeper into what, kind of like how to create the visuals and like what the visuals should be, and not even just visuals, but just supports in general. And we really talk about five different kinds of supports, or really five like more components of supports that you want to make sure that you want your supports to have these components. Maybe not every single component every single time, but definitely as more that you can add these components in, the more effective your supports will be, the more supported your children will be. So there's five. There's visual supports. We want the supports to be visual. We need it to be concrete because young children are very just concrete learners in general, but especially the neurodivergent population. We want them to be predictable, right? And we talk a lot about they're the same, right? And the schedule being the same, the predictableness is super helpful and super regulating. I mean, there was an example today we were talking about I think it was Sarah Catherine is her name. She was talking about how we go to the grocery store and like, don't you go to the grocery store? The one that you know where everything is, just so it'll be easier, you will go to maybe a grocery store. It might cost a little bit more. It might be a little bit farther away. But you go there because you know where everything's at. So you can go in and out, right? I know I definitely do that. At Walmart, I know where everything is at. I used to do shopping for my school at Walmart. And so I've spent a lot of times walking the aisles. I know where everything's at. So when I go shopping for myself, that's the place that I will generally go if I just need to go in and out and need to get a variety of things. But sometimes I go to different Walmarts that are maybe outside of the city or just in a different place in the city, and it's rearranged completely different. And that is frustrating for me. That is very dysregulating. And I'm actually probably likely to buy less things looking for everything. And now I may have the visual support, right? Well, you know, what will I go to? I will go to the visual supports. I will look at the signs in the aisles. And that's even still frustrating. I'd rather just already have the predictability of knowing where everything is. I talked about this too with Mona De La Hook, who, you know, we've been wishing her well, who had some problems with her health. I won't get into detail, but we talked about ODD and the diagnosis. And we talked about how important predictability and connection was, and how impactful and how regulating and how impactful those things are, especially for those children who are diagnosed with ODD. We want it to be visual. We want it to be concrete. We want it to be predictable and also filtered, right? Sometimes the supports, filtering some of the input that they're receiving. Sometimes the input sometimes a room is too bright. Sometimes the room is too loud. And, you know, if it's too bright, maybe you get a visor to kind of block out some of that, to filter some of that input. If it's too loud, maybe use headphones, right, to kind of filter in some of that auditory input. These are supports that can help our children be successful. Now, we also want our supports to be interesting, right? Maybe a little novel. Because we know, especially when we're talking about our, you know, autistic population, that interest can very much drive willingness, right? That connection of interest can drive the willingness to do something. And I saw a really great example today of, they had a little Pokemon cards and they had different Pokemon, but it was for their kind of visual checklist of their routine, right? And I think they had some kind of water Pokemon for bath time that had like some bubbles in it. And so, and they had a potion. In Pokemon, they have potions to heal their Pokemon. And the potion was for medicine. So they used these little Pokemon cards or the visuals of Pokemon cards, but that they just printed off on pieces of paper with Pokemon cards. You don't have to get actual Pokemon cards in hopes you get the right ones for the schedule. No, just go online and print them out. Laminate them just so that they're sturdy and they can stay a while, because, you know, children are typically not gentle with everything. And you don't want to be dysregulated and get triggered because they're ruining this visual support that you spent an hour creating. So if you can, I always say laminate things if you can. And because it is helpful to be right there for them to use it, be so they can touch it. That's making it more concrete, right? They can touch it. It's predictable. Sometimes we even need to, with our routine, sometimes we need to chunk our routines. A lot of times we have this routine and it's so much, right? And that can be overwhelming. That visually overwhelming. And so sometimes we have to reduce the amount. Maybe we just do it in three. Maybe it's instead of having the whole day, maybe you just have three parts of the bedtime routine, right? And maybe you just put them in different places, right? You can have visual schedules, but you can kind of break them up too if it's too overwhelming to have too many. Or you can, if you go on my any of my social media sites, I actually have a Mr. Chaz visual schedule and it's magnetic, so you can move them around. And so you can just, when you're done, you can just put it away. So it's easy to know they only have to focus on the first one, right? And to just that input of being able to kind of remove it or slide it off can be helpful. There's actually these little magnetic, if you're removing them, you can actually put them in, you can buy a little magnetic basket in which to put them in that will stick on your refrigerator too. I have a visual checklist on my refrigerator, the Mr. Chaz visual checklist, really great magnets. And sometimes I'll put them off and I'll put them in this little magnetic basket that I have. So it's different ways that you can do it. Just knowing the idea, I'll tell you the idea behind it and then give you some practical examples. And the important part of knowing the idea behind it so that you can create your own examples. You can be flexible with it, right? You can create your own supports that are visual, concrete, predictable, filtered, and interesting to your child. And when we don't have these things that are predictable, we get so triggered when our children get triggered, because when things don't go their way, when things don't go as they expect, because that prediction error that we talked about in the Mono de la Hook episode. But we can do more things to help the world be more predictable. Now, one of the maybe criticisms that some people will try to have with these visual supports is that it's not like it creates rigidity within children and it makes them less flexible. But let's go back to the Walmart analogy. When I go to Walmart, I know where everything is at. It doesn't matter which way. I could start on the side where the pharmacy is, or I could start on the side where the food is, right? Or I could start in the back where the dairy is, and it doesn't matter. I will be able to create a route or different routes depending on wherever we start. And my flexibility is actually increased with predictability, right? The more I'm able to predict, the more flexible I'm able to be. But when I go into Walmart, I don't know where everything is at and everything is kind of all moved around, or even let alone a different store, right? I go into Harris Teeter or the Piggly Wiggly or Publix or something like that, and I'm not used to the layout. I then kind of have to go aisle by aisle, looking at the signs. I'm going to go through a lot slower. I can't just bounce from place to place because I'm afraid I might miss something, or right? That I have to be much more rigid when I don't have as much predictability for me to feel good about what I'm doing, for me to meet the goals that I have, for myself. Another example of this that you can use, parents, you could write the menu for the week. You could write the menu on what is for dinner for the week so they know what to expect. It's not a surprise every night when they come to the dinner table. But just make sure that when you do that, add a little visual in there, right? Draw a little picture of whatever you're going to make. Now, that's going to require you to have some executive functioning skills too and to plan ahead like that, kind of plan those dinners. But that's really what we're doing with especially these children. All children, but especially young children and children, with disabilities, that we have to lend our prefrontal lobe to them. We have to lend our supports, use our skills, and to kind of support them in being successful and meeting the expectations that we and other adults have of them. Now, that's a whole nother conversation, whether those expectations are appropriate or not. And that is really a whole nother conversation. But let's say you've gone past that point and you've identified that this is an appropriate expectation for this child. That visual support, like the dinner and having the dinner, could probably make all the difference and get them excited maybe about pizza on Wednesday or chicken fingers on Thursday or tortellini on Friday. At the very least, it gives them time to process what's going to happen, which will likely decrease the intensity of the emotion that they feel when they come to the dinner table and it's something that they don't like or don't prefer. You want what you say to be concrete too. Children are very literal. And you know, children in general are very little. Did you see that video? Did anyone see that video where the dad is coaching the son in t-ball, and the ball is on the tee, and the child has the bat, and the child swings and he misses, and the child misses, and the dad says, "Keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball." And what do you think the child does? He walks to the ball and literally puts his physical eye on the ball, touching the ball, right? And so this happens all the time. It happens. There's even sometimes we'll have the pause button. You know, we've to encourage children to pause, you know, to kind of just, you know, just pause and maybe smile, take a deep breath, or pause and take a deep breath. Sometimes the pause and kind of like reset thing. Sometimes you put that visual up there and some child might see that visual and see it as number 11. So you just have to be very aware of how they're receiving the communication that we are putting out there. On conscious discipline, we always say where there is chaos, add in structure, right? So if you're doing transitions with your children, whether you're in a school or you are at your house just trying to get to school, that is a sign for you to add structure, add visuals, map it out. MAP stands for model, add visuals, and practice. And modeling, meaning they're watching you do it. They're seeing the process, what it looks like. You're putting visuals of exactly what it's supposed to look like. You know, exactly what they can see. Like, what it's supposed to look like. And put it right there. And when you're doing those, you know, put those visuals up. Don't just put them up there and let them be just decorations. Do them with intention, right? Point to them. Go through them with them, right? And that's also part of the practice. Literally go through the motions. Point to, okay, we're doing the checklist before we go out. Just had a parent literally just messaged me before I recorded this podcast episode. One of the parents that I'm working with in my class, because in my class, you also can ask me questions in between the classes. So in my class, they were asking about the routine and you know, what do we do kind of during the routine and having a hard time, like they're not using the bathroom and saying they're using the bathroom, not using the bathroom. And one of the things that I said about five things, but one of the things I'll share with you that I said is it may be helpful to have a little visual checklist before you go out. What do we need to do, right? Is it shoes on? Get a picture of shoes. Bathroom done, all right? Little potty picture. And then maybe shirt on, pants on, whatever it is, right? Or maybe backpack on, right? And maybe that's the checklist. And it's just three things, right? You put that by the door. Maybe you have a little another checklist in the room, right? And maybe that's the socks on, underwear, pants, shirt, right? Chunking the visual so it's not so much in one spot. And it's easier for them to process. And when we chunk anything and put it in smaller bite-sized pieces, it's easier for us to process. Now, I will say with all of this that, you know, the visual supports, the mapping it out are all really great things. But it's also important for me to acknowledge that we have to create a foundation so that these things can be even more helpful. If you're not creating a sense of safety, a sense of connection, then the visual supports are not going to be half as effective. They might even be useless because they're going to just be in that kind of fight or flight mode. We're going to be so anxious that we're not going to be able to help them reach that higher brain state to really focus on what to do, to learn their routine, right? If we're anxious every time during our transitions and we're yelling and it's this big to-do and all this emotional charge, it's going to be really hard for them to learn this routine. It's going to be really hard for them to focus on that. And you're going to be wasting all your time just doing visual supports. You are the number one support that a child has. And the visual is supporting you to support the child. So you have to remember to learn to practice composure. And again, it's not staying regulated. It's not never being triggered. It is recognizing when you're triggered, bringing yourself back and staying on the path, staying aligned with your values and staying aligned with your skills, right? Your assertive communication as opposed to your aggressive or passive communication. It is your encouragement as opposed to your judgment, right? It is empathy as opposed to being critical. It is seeing them with positive intent, that they're trying their best, seeing the best in them, as opposed to they're just trying to get on my nerves, they should know better, why aren't they doing this by now? And these visual supports are very much a part of choices too. When sometimes children have a hard time making a choice, those you can use visual supports to help children make a choice. And you can also help them, this is another important one, the difference, the shift between from if then to when then, right? Because if we do if then, it's really giving the illusion of choice, right? If we're doing an if then, and the when then is, this is when it's not really a choice. This is us kind of using our adult assertiveness to communicate with children who don't have much receptive language. And so it's but if kind of gives that illusion of choice, one, when it's really not a choice, like we might be saying, if you clean up, then you get to go on the iPad. If you brush your teeth, then you get to have dessert. And that gives illusion of choice. And it's also kind of bribery-ish. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you do this, then you get this. It is language, kind of bribery language, as opposed to the when then is more about time, right? When this happens, then this happens, right? It's just when this happens, then this happens. And, you know, they may not be doing it right now, but you know, once you clean up, then we're going to go get dessert. You know, once we brush our teeth, then we're going to go have some iPad time. When you bathe, then we're going to bring out the bubbles, right? So it's when then, not if then. When then. Now, for those who, maybe the children who really have a hard time, maybe the visual schedule is even difficult for them, right? They're not even looking at the visual. You reduce the visuals where it's only, you're using two or three, and they don't even look at it. What do you do then, right? Again, we're making it concrete. How do we make it concrete? One, you could do an object schedule. And so whenever it's time to do a thing, you hand them an item, right? So for example, maybe it's time for them to do go bath time, right? So you hand them, you get the rubber ducky, you hand them the rubber ducky, and you say bath time, and then kind of guide them to bath time. So every time they see that rubber ducky, they know bath time is coming. You know, maybe they're going, it's blocks, right? Or you want them to... choose a center for them, and you're maybe you're helping him make helping them choose a center, or they're scheduling, you're scheduling centers because you want that predictability. And so you want a child to go to blocks. You go, you hand them the block, and you guide them to the area, to the block area, right? And over time, they will learn that, like, oh, once I get my block, I go over here and do this. Now, and they'll do it independently over time. Now, that's going to take a lot of work on the front end of you routinely and predictably doing that at the same time and doing it the same way every day. But that is a way that you can even support children to know what to expect and to guide children and transition children that even struggle with the visuals, right? So there's lots of different ways that you can support children, especially in transitions. We also talked about noticing, and they gave some examples of noticing, and I think we've talked about it in the past on the podcast. And if not, maybe I'm thinking about the class, but let's take a moment to talk about it for a moment. Talk about it real quick. I'm actually going to ask you, which one do you think is noticing, right? Is it saying, A, you need to calm down? Is it B, what happened? Just calm down. Or is it C, your body is saying something, right? Something isn't working for you right now. Which one do you think it is? I'll give you some time to answer. Is it A, you need to calm down? B, what happened? Just calm down. Or C, your body is saying something isn't working for you right now. C, you're right. Your body is saying something isn't working for you right now. Right? It's noticing, right? You need to calm down. That is a judgment, you know? And it's also dismissive too. It's dismissive of what they may be experiencing. And I'm a child who's really upset. Imagine, no, you're an adult. And imagine you're really upset and someone came up to you, your partner came up to you, or your teacher, and they say, you need to calm down. Would that calm you down? 9 times out of 10, 10 times out of 10 is not going to calm you down. And the history of calming down has no one ever calmed down from someone else just telling them to calm down. And if you don't believe me, go next time you have an argument with your partner, just tell them to calm down and see what happens. Just see what happens. See if they feel seen, heard, connected, and safe with you. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. It'll end in divorce and then the children will suffer. And then what happened? You said, what happened, right? We use language, something happened, right? And that just calm down. And even you heard my voice, you know, what happened? Just calm down. It's a little empathetic in my voice, but it's still judgy, right? Just calm down. Why can't you just calm down? The behind that, what I'm saying is, the underneath message is, what you're upset about isn't really valuable or important. And I don't understand why you can't just calm down, why it's not that easy, because what you're upset about is not a big deal. Get over it, right? Just calm down. Even though I start off with a little bit of curiosity with what happened, I'm adding a lot of judgment and dismissiveness there. But when I say your body is saying something isn't working right for you, something isn't working for you? Your body is saying that you didn't like that, or your shoulder went like this, or you walked away from the group, right? These are all noticing what is happening, as opposed to judging what is happening, right? And what that also does is that it allows them to notice for themselves, that when they start to get upset, right, that they're noticing more on their body, because we know with our scale of assertiveness that we talk about, like, what we focus on, we get more of, right? And so focusing on what their body's doing as opposed to the behavior on the outside is that tip of that behavior iceberg instead of, you know, what's happening underneath. us kind of focusing on what their body's doing, next time they're upset or frustrated, they get awareness of what their body's doing. And that's essential for having the skill of self-regulation. Most of us now get overwhelmed and frustrated or angry and triggered, and we don't even recognize, I'm fine, right? We're not really recognizing the sensations in our own bodies that are telling us that we're very much not fine, that we're very much triggered, that we're very much in an emotional state, that we're very much in a survival state. And a lot of times a child will even notice that we're triggered before we notice it, right? People on the outside will notice that we're triggered before we notice it ourselves. And that's one of the powerful things about noticing, that it builds awareness in the child that you're noticing, right? And we also talked, I guess we didn't talk about it here, downloading Calm. I'm going to talk about it here in the session, so I'm actually not going to go over it, but I guess I'm probably thinking again about the class. I just did the class because we do the class every Tuesday, the first Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Eastern. So that's actually yesterday. And so I might be overlapping some of the information between podcast episodes I've recorded and kind of what we talked about in the class. But I will say again, the class is super, super, super helpful. I hope to see you there. I've been getting so much great feedback on it. And if you want to transform your parenting, this is the thing to do. This is a thing that I think is more valuable than all the other things, honestly, that I've put out. It is requiring a lot of my time to create and do. And you may have noticed I'm a little bit less present on social media, but it's because I'm creating other forms of content to really get that deep transformation that people are yearning for. And I'm sure you are too. If you're listening to the podcast and you made it to the end of this episode, and yeah, we talk about neurodivergent children. We talk about, you know, differences. You get to, the people in the class get to help shape some of the conversation. Obviously, I have lots of things that we plan on talking about there or in the chapter. But then people, it's also influenced by people coming and asking questions and sharing their experience and little things that, you know, I notice from the people who show up, or even who aren't able to show up but message me ahead of time about what's going on with their children. And the book that we're going over is Conscious Discipline, Building Resilient Classrooms. And you get free shipping using the code MrChaz24. So definitely get that. You don't have to get it to join the club. But it is helpful because then you get to go back and really look at it in print form. But some people like to just really get their information through audio and video. And if that's one, if you're one of those people, then this is 100% definitely for you. But if you also like to have a book and have something to like look at, to stare at, and to go through the charts that I'm referring to, then go grab the book. And again, we focus on parents. So I hope this has all been helpful for you. I am doing this, going to try to do it for the whole year. We'll see if it lasts. I think I got about maybe 6 more classes in me until it's really what I've planned is done, but we'll see afterwards. And I might have another session just kind of wrap things up. And if this is something you're looking for or anything, or there's any way that you think that I can help and support you in a better way, in a different way, I'm always trying to find ways to reach people and get this information to people because it's not out there enough, and especially not for parents. Honestly, the people who are learning about this conscious discipline are the people who are schools because they have more money. The parents don't. This is not as accessible. This information is not as accessible for parents as it is for a lot of teachers, and definitely not for all teachers. But what happens is teachers, you know, they work in a school system or whatever, and they get government money, they get grant money, and the grant money pays for these teachers to go to these conferences, and that is how they learn, right? And but these conferences are often $600 on the cheap end. I think that might be the cheapest. I don't even know if they have any, that's like a conference on discount would be like $600. They're often $800 to $1,000 and some change. And so no teacher is coming out of pocket to pay for that. That's like, that's a year's worth of my salary. I'm just kidding, it's not a year's worth of salary, but it's a lot of money when obviously you're factoring all these other expenses and teachers are paying for things for their classrooms and all that other good stuff. So parents don't get this. And so really, I am a conduit to the parents out there, this conscious discipline framework. And honestly, I don't think there's anyone else out there really speaking to parents like I am about this framework. It's mostly, they've mostly only really focused on teachers. And that is, and that's why, because, you know, these big things right now, like these big conferences, they do cost a lot of money to run. I mean, I'm out here, like they're paying for me to fly out here, my meals and stuff like, and I'm just a helper here, right? And so this is, the conferences are a really big orchestration and they do two scholarships per conference. So if you're out there, go get those scholarships and apply for those scholarships and you get that grant to apply for those scholarships, please go to whatever master instructor is doing that conference and tell them that you found out about the scholarship from me, because they'll tell me, and then or you just tell me if you get the scholarship. Actually, that's better. Just tell me if you get the scholarship, because that would be fulfilling to know that I got another parent into the conscious discipline world of knowledge and framework and just this life-changing transformational framework. So please, please, please keep following the podcast, because that's kind of been the main thing I've used to do long form content to dive into deeper nuance. And then also the classes have been the other thing. And then obviously short term, a lot of you probably found me through social media where I share about it or use the framework. I'm not always intentionally like saying like, hey, this is, everyone should just try this life transforming framework. I usually frame it as, hey, there's this challenge that you're having. This is what you can do. This is why you can do it. And if this has been helpful for you, know that this is just one of the concepts that come from the conscious discipline framework that I'm showing you. All this, you know, where are the brain posters? Everyone wants the brain posters, but no one wants the brain book. And you can do the posters all day, but if you don't have the book, you don't have the knowledge that really goes through with it, you're losing out on a lot of opportunities for your own learning and growth in whoever you're sharing those posters with. And the posters will have so much more meaning if you get the Conscious Discipline Building Resilient Classroom book. And again, you get free shipping and anything Conscious Discipline using my code, MrChaz24. But I will say you can only use it once a year. So, you know, use it wisely. Get it. Maybe get a few other things, but at least just get the book to get you started on the journey. And if you're an international parent, then conscious discipline, like the stuff that they're putting out currently, is probably least accessible to you. Now, I will say that there is this book on Audible called Easy to Love, Difficult to Discipline that doesn't really have the conscious discipline framework, but it's kind of using the conscious discipline. It's by the same author. And it's a nice little introduction to conscious discipline, but it's not really the framework that you really need to transform. I think it's a good book. I just don't think it's a transformational book. I think that it's a really good book. It's a really helpful book. You'll probably learn a lot of new skills. They take you through scripts. It's a really helpful book, but I don't see it as a transformational book because it's got some strategies, but it doesn't have a lot of the pieces that you really need to implement the strategies. That's my criticism of it. You can also get the book on the Conscious Discipline website as well. But the podcast, and Conscious Discipline also has a podcast, so that can be helpful. It's free. But then also my classes, they don't have any classes for, they do actually have classes, but again, the classes are like $400. you know, I actually might be talking more about that soon, just letting the teachers know and the parent. But, you know, I don't think that most parents will purchase the $400, $500 course, but they do have courses, and I will probably be putting them out there. So if you want those, if you're thinking about those courses, reach out to me and ask me what you think would be best with your situation, and I will direct you to, so you get the right, because they do have a few courses, and I wouldn't want you to purchase a $500 course and then to realize that it wasn't the best course for you. You know what I'm saying? So hope all this helps. And I will see y'all on the interwebs, and, you know, keep on learning, keep on this journey. As always, avoid being a perfectionist, be an improvist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little every day.
What's my name? What's my name?
What's